You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Romillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. With Miami looking to close out the series against the Indiana Pacers, I thought it might be a good idea to bring back special guest Caitlin Cooper of Indy Cornrows over at SB Nation. Obviously, Caitlin has been on the show before, and no one knows more about the Pacers than she does. So thank you so much for taking the time to be with me on a Sunday, Caitlin.
Hey, no problem. Good to be back.
Yeah. Well, I can only imagine that you probably wish that you were here under better circumstances. Obviously, the Pacers down 3-0 against the Heat, and you've long been banging the drum that the Heat were a bad matchup for the Pacers, and I think it's been pretty evident that that's been the case. So what has stood out to you that kind of confirms all your thoughts about why the Pacers wouldn't match up well with Miami?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do right now with the fact that Sabonis is out. I mean, Miami's doing so much with switches that's really bogging down what the Pacers are trying to do. I mean, Bam's impact numbers in this series are just absurd. So that kind of marginalizes what you're going to do with Miles to an extent, because you don't want to set a lot of ball screens and be running ISOs against Bam that kind of lead into nothing. And they have to attack so much from the outside matchup. And then a lot of times Miami's loading up at the corners, meaning the blocks and the elbows, and pinching in on those drives. And beyond that, just the differential in the three-point shooting. You know, going in, I did a little preview article and showed that Miami had only had like a winning percentage over 70 in games when they shot above 35% from three. So you just kind of knew that if they got hot, that it was going to be trouble for the Pacers, especially in the seeding game, the first of the two seeding games when everybody played. And Miami didn't have a great shooting game, and they still weren't able to get a win in that outcome. It just kind of spelled some not great things, I thought, to me in first-round series.
What about the three-point shooting from Miami has particularly stood out to you? Because, I mean, obviously Duncan Robinson's been great, but you started to get some really – well, incredible performances from Goran Dragic, Tyler Hero, even Jimmy Butler's been able to capitalize on three-point shots that we did not expect him to be able to hit. Has it been just Miami getting hot at the right times, or has there been some problems with, McMillan's defensive schemes or the personnel to actually be able to implement those schemes?
Sure, I think that's a really good question. And game two, when Duncan, went off, I felt like early on, I don't really think that was a matchup that they probably should have had with Victor, because he's still clearly, I think everyone can tell, he's not himself. And if he was going to need to have energy at the other end to be attacking in these isolation situations, then I don't know that it was necessarily the best for him to be locking and trailing on Duncan Robinson through mazes of screens. I think that depleted some of his energy stores, but also because his best asset as a defender is his ability to roam and provide kind of like fluttering help coverage. And when he has to stay glued to Robinson, that kind of diminishes what his overall effect is. So I felt like what they did in game three, though they got off to a very bad start, was the right adjustment in starting either, Edmund Sumner or Justin Holiday and getting Victor off of that defensive matchup. But in game three, it's kind of interesting because, I think the two things that you can really credit Nate McMillan for as a coach is their defensive schemes and his ability to have a team that comes out and is ready to play and that they're going to meet an effort standard. And from the beginning yesterday, you could just tell, I mean, there's no way that the Miami Heat should be able to come down in a horn set and just have Goran enter it to Bam at the elbow and just barely brush off the other elbow, and Brogdon doesn't even get a hand up and he splashes a three. Like, obviously the Heat still have to make these shots at the incredible clip that they were making, but the Pacers' energy in that first half was definitely a disappointment. And that while I think that there's a lot of things that should absolve Nate McMillan for what this matchup kind of is and the mechanics of it, the fact that his greatest strength is kind of, getting the most out of what's energy, and that's not what they came out with, that's something he has to answer for, I think, to an extent too.
Do you have any insight as to why the low energy levels might be there? I mean, is it just the fact that they feel that they're undermanned, or they're just an insurmountable, perhaps a challenge to try and get some momentum in the series? Because, I mean, you're absolutely right. There are plays there where either Oladipo or Brogdon or somebody has just looked like they don't even really want to be there. And I mean, I know a lot of that has to do with the pressure of being in the bubble and everything else, but I wonder if they've revealed any kind of particular insight on Zoom calls or anything like that.
Right. I mean, Victor had a really, he's kind of, here I am stammering and stuttering. He's kind of been tough to figure in some of these games because, yeah. In the second half yesterday, when they started getting some traction, he would be diving on the floor and going for loose balls. But then in the first half, when they came out as flat as they did, he had a stretch of back-to-back-to-back possessions where he got burned by Robinson on a back cut, went down to the other end, held the ball, and just walked it up into a three. Just completely settled, shot the three. They never moved, never made a pass.
And then fouled
and came
Duncan
down the other end and fouled Duncan Robinson on a three. It's just, that's not really the level of focus. And the only word I can use, like, this is going to sound a little bit harsh, but it's just incredibly casual. Like, a lot of his play at times has seemed a little bit casual. And I don't know if that goes back to he just doesn't feel right in his body yet, but his handle hasn't been there. It's been kind of sloppy, especially when he goes to his right to left cross. I mean, I think that you hit the nail on the head a little bit with the bubble comment. I think that this is an unusual circumstance where if you're playing outside the bubble, which granted they would be playing these two games in Miami, but you haven't been separated from your family for over a month and really, the entire outside world, where if you feel like maybe your team doesn't have a lot of levers that they can pull or ways to kind of gain an edge in a matchup, where does that, internal motivation and fight come from? But, to their credit, I did feel like they came out of halftime and showed a little bit more fight coming out of the third quarter, though it was helped by the fact that Miami was missing some shots.
Yeah, but I mean, you're absolutely right, though. They played with a kind of intensity for a team that felt the desperation of knowing that their season was on the brink, because at this point, down 3-0, it just makes that seem ever so more impossible for them to climb back and make this an even series or to even challenge Miami in any way. I talked to Tony East of Locked On Pacers about this before, but I think right now they're more likely to just sweep the Pacers than they are to extend it to 6 games, which was originally what my prediction for the series would be. It just seems like Miami has an ability to respond to anything that the Pacers can throw at them. And you could give some kind of edge perhaps to their ability to get to the free throw line, something that Indiana has not done particularly well either. Do you have a take regarding the 20 free throw attempts that Jimmy Butler shot in Game 3? Because Tony East did not. And I imagine Pacers fans probably think it's a little ridiculous. I know Nate McMillan certainly was pretty pissed off about it.
Yeah, he was heated about it. my takes in general are more towards the oatmeal side of things than the hot side. But I'm not going to relitigate all those calls. I don't really have an interest in, like, the next day getting up to see how many of these calls were legitimate. But I will say, like, I think the Pacers should have expected this to an extent. I mean, Miami's been the best team in the league in free throw rate all year. Jimmy Butler is great at drawing contact around the rim, and the Pacers were dead last. There was a lot of comments about that in Game 2 when TJ Warren hadn't attempted a free throw yet through the first 2 games, however many quarters. And, like, as good as TJ Warren is as a scorer, when he gets in around the basket, he's a lot of times leaning away from contact.
Yeah.
And he's so good at one-legged leaners and floaters. Like, you're not going to draw and get to the line a bunch. You have to get fouled to get to the free throw line, whereas Jimmy's really going and playing into contact. So I'm not going to get really hung up on that, especially when you give up 74 points in the first half. And
Is there a reason why he's gone away from Sumner getting any kind of significant playing time? Because he was not available at all in Game 3, in coach's decision. But is he a better defensive matchup to try and limit what Robinson can do at least?
I had said that I felt like – in the final seeding game, when they started Edmund Sumner over Aaron, I thought, this is foreshadowing something, that they're going to go to that right away so that they can switch Victor off of that matchup and just tell Edmund Sumner, your one job is just to be shadowing Duncan Robinson. But in Game 1, he had some nice moments. And then in Game 2, he barely played. He had a little bit of an offensive hiccup or two in that one, and then obviously he didn't play at all. But I would have looked at that just because then, I would still have Justin Holiday in a closing lineup just because he's more of a two-way player, obviously. But I would have looked at starting him and still using Justin off of the bench just so that they could maintain that level of spacing and not have to play some of the lineups they were getting to yesterday. I doubt have played much, if at all, this year, because Miles was having to come back in and play with the bench, and some of the other combinations they got to, I think, were a little bit different than what they're used to. But, I mean, your guess as to why he hasn't seen any court time when some of the other players have been struggling is as good as mine. I don't think that they've really given much insight on that topic.
Well, we'll continue talking with Caitlin Cooper of Indy Cornrows about the Miami Heat-Indiana Pacers playoff series. You're listening to Locked On Heat. subscribe to the show on your favorite app to listen to podcasts and always get the latest episode by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Here again with Caitlin Cooper of Indy Cornrows breaking down the Indiana Pacers matchup against the Miami Heat, and has not been a particularly good one for the Pacers. Has there been anything that you can take away as a positive from all this? Because I think you probably have to make – I think Malcolm Brogdon is pretty much it at this point. There hasn't been much else to kind of hang your hat on. T.J. Warren's been a little inconsistent, although he did have a big game three. Brogdon, I think, has been pretty solid throughout the series. But is there anything there that you think is a positive for the Pacers out of the three games they've lost?
Yeah, I mean, T.J. is an interesting case because – some of the switches that Brogdon and Oladipo are getting, the Heat aren't giving to T.J. Warren, because basically they use a show and recover so that Jimmy mostly stays with him. And then if they do happen to get a switch, the Heat are generally sending somebody to the opposite side of the lane to shadow. Like, it's evident that they were keyed in on making sure that they were going to make other people on the team beat them besides T.J. Warren. Malcolm in the last game was fairly surgical, I felt, in the second half as far as getting to the matchups he needed to. Like, in the seeding game I used in my preview, there was an example where he and T.J. screened for each other, and T.J. got Hero on him, and Jimmy was stuck with Malcolm, and T.J. just exited the play. Like, they just went away from what the better matchup was so that Malcolm could ISO against Jimmy, and that didn't make a lot of sense. And that exact scenario played out in game three, and they rescreened it. Malcolm was patient to get the matchup that he wanted and then got a shot off the glass. Just, it's dribbling with more purpose. Because in games one and two, he had some kind of meandering long, like, I don't know where to go. I'm running into the BAM brick wall over and over again, and it wasn't a lot of movement. But I thought he overall made better decisions yesterday. From a coaching standpoint, they did some little small tweaks that I don't think a lot of people are pointing out. Like, sometimes they'll have Bam pinching in on those driving lanes. And a couple times they had Miles or whoever the big was on the floor set a flare screen so that they could get an open shot. They didn't make these shots, but it was a tweak to try to clear out some of the crowding. And I also thought it was a little bit better decision. They were running weaves up top with the three guards instead of involving Miles and getting Bam involved so that they could screen out the person that was crowding and get Malcolm back into the paint. But as you say, I think definitely, I mean, he was a monster yesterday with the numbers that he put up. So that was definitely something that you could take as, you know, I think they found a few ways that heading into game four, if they bring that same sort of energy and focus and apply a few of the things that they found to clean out the congestion in the paint, that they might be able to gain a little bit more traction. Though, as you commented earlier, it feels like the Heat always have a counter for the counter.
Why didn't they go to Brogdon more in the waning moments of game three? It felt like they were kind of trying to go to Warren more than anything else. And of course, that play where he kind of spun it directly into Dragic and turned the ball over, that stands out to me. But it seemed like Brogdon was most likely to get the kind of matchup that would be favorable to him getting a shot off, particularly when he goes 4-7 from 3-point range. You'd figure he'd have a good look at the basket, but it just seemed like he was not the factor you would have expected him to be.
Yeah, two moments. That's a good thing that you bring up, because two moments before Victor fouled out, Victor got a switch against Goran. They used a guard-to-guard screen with Justin Holiday, and it felt like Victor was stepping into the role that he would have had 2 years ago that he isn't really ready to have yet, because he backed up, which would have been his signature move, back up against a switch and spring forward at the three-point line and take a shot. And for one, it's against Dragic, not a big, so why he didn't continue to attack off the dribble has been kind of a question in all three of these games. But I don't think the Pacers needed him to be taking a hero ball shot in that moment when, as you say, Malcolm was the player that was going off, that was really having more of the success. And he didn't really, after that point, Victor didn't really have the ball anymore when it was a one-possession game up until he went and fouled out and got out of the game. And then on that possession you mentioned when T.J. turned into traffic, the Pacers are kind of notorious for having breakdowns on ATO plays. This has happened a lot. I mean, some people might remember last year in the playoffs against Boston at the end of game two, they had almost a similar gaffe. I mean, I watched that set back enough times and tried to figure out what exactly they were attempting to run. I don't think the ball went – I don't think Justin inbounded it where it was supposed to go. I think Malcolm was supposed to get the ball, and Justin didn't think he was open, because pretty soon you can see that Malcolm's, like, palms up, like, what are we doing? And I think that they were probably, my guess, because this is a Nate McMillan favorite, they were probably running zipper, which is a down screen, and that's how Malcolm was attempting to get open and then flow into pick and roll. But they never got to it, and then it just kind of seemed like nobody wanted the ball. They also could have looked, they run a little re-screen, off-screen, re-screen, off-ball set that could have got Justin open for a three with Malcolm dribbling to the sideline, but he just didn't touch it in time. And then it was kind of like, do any of you actually want the ball, until they, you know, got a turnover. But sadly, that wasn't completely out of character for the Pacers in those settings, which is where Nate McMillan draws a lot of criticism, that a lot of times they come out in crunch time moments at the end of games, unless they can get to something simple like a basic pick and roll, it ends up getting botched.
Well, maybe this is too difficult to answer, but I think, you know, obviously there is a pretty good built-in excuse for the Pacers in that they don't have Domantas Sabonis. But, you know, obviously the whole entire flow of the game would have changed with Sabonis available. But in moments like that, how would it have been different to have Sabonis out on the floor to create or initiate the set?
Well, first and foremost, I think you got to look at Justin, which earlier in the year he had kind of a moment like that too, where he didn't get the ball where it needed to go. Like, I didn't think that Malcolm was so covered that he couldn't have inbounded it there. But I think if you had to give it to Miles, and that would have been Sabonis. Sabonis is a lot. He's more of a calming presence if you have to flow into something out of pocket from a broken set, where he could have dribbled over and they could have ran a handoff, or he's just a lot more fluid in his decision making. Because it was interesting because Miles had a fairly strong game yesterday. I felt like in the third quarter, he came out and kind of set the tone defensively. He got a few offensive rebounds that were key moments when they missed shots. But then in the last like 3 or 4 minutes, up until the point where he made that three that hit the side of the backboard and then like kind of banked in, he gave up a pretty key rebound to Bam under the basket. He had, which this wasn't completely his fault because TJ is the one that turned it over, but that felt like kind of a broken play. And then he tried to run a dribble handoff at the top of the key and he turned it over. And I feel like those are moments where if Sabonis is out there, you're going to flow into stuff more easily. And just beyond that, they really miss his roll gravity, because so much of the time they're having to initiate offense from the perimeter against an isolation or these switches. The paint is packed. And if he's out there as somebody who's capable to not only punish a mismatch on the inside, but also score in the post, pass out of the post, score on the roll and pass out of the roll, you're drawing those defenders there, and then he can make a play out to somebody else where it's a cleaner moment. Because a lot of times you'll notice that Bam is taking active steps away from Miles even when he's on the perimeter. And to Miles' credit, he's made some of those shots, but you're not getting anything else out of those plays that's going to be surprising, that doesn't allow them just to continue to load up in the paint.
Did you expect more out of Miles Turner going into the series, or did you think that that matchup with Bam Adebayo would be one that he could not exploit?
That's a tough question. I mean, I do think he is a five. I think that he and Sabonis are both fives. I think he's playing in his more natural position. And in game two, I mean, Bam's box score, while it was relatively empty, he's still changing the complexion of the game on both ends of the floor pretty regularly. I mean, you can tell that just by looking at his on-off numbers. He's completely disrupting what the Pacers have to do. I mean, Miles hit some threes in that game that were more like spot-up attempts. It's going to be tougher to run pick-and-pop against the switching defense, and he's not going to do a lot on the inside. But I think he's done enough where you can feel, I mean, not game one, because he really second-guessed himself quite a bit in that one. But in the second two games, I think you can feel good about his individual performance for the most part up until the waning moments of that game, aside from the fact that because of some of his overall limitations as a player, it limits what else the Pacers can do. If that makes sense.
No, it does. Absolutely. Well, we'll continue talking to Caitlin Cooper of Indy Cornrows in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Just a reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Here with Caitlin Cooper, breaking down the Indiana Pacers series versus the Miami Heat. And I asked you about the Pacers, if there was any positives you could take away from that. But has anything particularly stood out on the Miami side of things? I know we kind of talked about Duncan a little bit. Goran Dragic obviously has been playing very well, but I didn't even expect this kind of breakout series from Dragic, not to this extent. Has anything stood out to you on the Pacers side of things?
Yeah, Dragic is interesting because in game two down the stretch, The Pacers' point of attack defense against him was quite poor. There was two occasions where Victor was literally like getting put in the spin cycle, and it was like a tiny clip on the screen, which some of this has been something you could kind of foreshadow even clear back to last summer, because Brogdon just isn't – he's going to have problems against quicker, crafty guards staying attached. And Victor, like I said earlier, is somebody that's better – roaming the entire floor. So if they're not playing Aaron, and even Aaron has somewhat limitations, they don't really have a great point of attack defender to stay attached there. And Dragic is so crafty in how he can go away from a screen. And he does a lot when he doesn't have the ball too. Like I highlighted this set in my preview piece that I really love that the Heat run. That's sometimes they use it as an ATO, and sometimes they just run it coming up the floor. But they enter it to the post, set a cross screen, get it to the post, and Dragic will set a back screen. Sometimes it's for Derrick Jones Jr. or, you know, another big. And that guy rolls to the basket, and then he'll quick turn and slip and get to the rim. And they've run that once or twice. The Pacers covered it well once. But just as an example of, he's not somebody that's just standing there when he doesn't have the ball. He's also really good at finding angles when a guy drives. He's going to lift up to the top of the key and get out of the vision of the weak side defender and be able to free himself up for a shot. And yeah, I mean, he's just really impressed me in this series of what all he can do, not only with the ball, but when he doesn't have it. And he seems to have somewhat, I mean, I don't know exactly what the Heat culture's like, but he seems to have a lot of organizational skills of getting guys in the right places and knowing who to hit and where to find them at the right moment.
That's been an area of improvement for him, because his role, and I keep talking about this, but it's nice that he's getting the focus that I think he deserves, because he's been a consistently good player. But when he was acquired by the team in 2015, you know, they had Chris Bosh there, they had Dwayne Wade there towards the end of his career, and the assumption was that he was going to be a third player to kind of help propel this team into title contention. And then, of course, Bosh, you know, gets the blood clots, and Dwayne leaves in 2016, and then Goran's stuck here with Deion Waiters and James Johnson and a couple of, you know, young players and Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow, and his role has continued to evolve, and now he's here back into form, playing alongside a superstar in Jimmy Butler and an ascending star in Bam Adebayo. And I think this is a much more comfortable place for him, but he's become much more of a vocal leader, much more comfortable in getting the ball to the right spots. And his lob work has been that's something that he was not particularly good at early on, but he's been so good at feeding Derrick Jones and others in just the right spots. And it's really shown there over the last couple of games. And so I'm glad for him that he's having this incredible performance, because I think everybody can start to recognize his consistent great play over the last few years. But 5 of 10 from three-point range in game three. And I mean, some of those were contested, but a lot of those were open looks too. Yeah. And it's just the constant motion offense there that they're implementing. There's so many cross sets and screens and everything else. It's just impossible to keep track of everybody at once. But I don't know if there's anybody who could have stuck to Dragic long enough to impact any of those shots. It was amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can point to, like I said, the one early in the game where Malcolm, like, just sauntered over there without his hand up. But yeah, I mean, I am an admirer from afar of a lot of the sets that the Miami Heat run, because I wrote too, they run a face cut play with Jimmy in the corner where Goran will be dribbling it up and it looks like they're going into pistol. And then just in a second, Jimmy cuts in front of the defender and they get a set out of that. They do a lot of smoke and mirrors where an action will look like one thing and it becomes something completely different. So as a person who enjoys the X's and O's of the game, I am a fan of Eric Spoelstra's offensive machinations.
I'm glad you brought up Spo, because I was going to touch on that with you. I mean, what's your feeling on Spoelstra and how he ranks among NBA coaches?
Oh, I think you got to have him pretty close to the top, personally. I mean, I don't think a lot of people – I mean, I didn't. And I thought that the Heat would make the playoffs this year, but I didn't expect this. And I did a roundtable about a month or two ago where they were talking about – asked, you know, who do you see as coming out of the East? And I think we all pretty much picked Milwaukee, but I said, if I have to have a sleeper, I pick the Heat. Like, I just feel like they're well coached. They have a lot working on their side. They got length. They can hit the three. They get to the free throw line. And I'm just, you know, again, Bam Adebayo, I saw the other day that he had a comment where he said, used his tagline that, you know, I'm one of one, and comparing himself to Miles Turner. And I think that's the case. Like, I was watching him play defense in some of these games, and I was honestly trying to think, is there another big that can defend the way that he does across this many positions? And I really couldn't come up with one. So,
yeah, no, that's fair. It's interesting that that kind of resonated across to the Pacers fan base, because on the Heat side of things, for one, it was a Heat beat reporter asking about the matchup between Bam and Miles, but there's some tension there existing back to the Team USA.
I'm sure.
So the comparison was one that did not sit well. In fact, you can even see that on times when, like, Miles gets a bucket, Bam will try to go extra aggressively on the other side to try and get that score back somehow. It's the little machinations within the game there. It's funny to see that play out the way it has. I was curious because Tony and I talked about it before, but I mean, I know a lot of it is the fact that you're missing Jeremy Lamb and Sabonis that changes the rotations considerably, but the bench in particular has been pretty bad for Indiana. And I don't know that there's an answer there as far as anybody able to step up. I mean, to be able to get, you know, double digit scoring from Aaron Holiday was pretty impressive, but I mean, TJ Leaf has been bad. I mean, sorry, TJ McConnell's been bad. Jakar Sampson's been okay, but I mean, you're not getting much consistency out of him. And McDermott's shooting has been absolutely woeful. What's the answer there? Is there an answer to try to get that bench to improve?
That's a good question. I mean, a lot of it is because Sabonis is the through line for both units, and a huge chunk of the second unit's offense is being able to run dribble handoffs and rescreens. I mean, like what Bam and Duncan Robinson do, that's Sabonis and Doug McDermott. And McDermott's better shooting off of motion, where he can move into a shot. And sometimes when they're running even just some of their basic wide pins, if Jakar isn't right on time on target with the screen and actually snipping and getting contact there, McDermott's footwork isn't exactly the same. Now, that all the fault does not fall on the people around him, because, you know, last year in the playoffs, he struggled to hit from 3-2, and by game four, he did not play, because if he can't, and some of it goes to a switching defense too. If you're switching against off-ball screens, that's going to make it tougher for him, because while he's improved at putting the ball on the floor, you know, that's not really his thing. He's not going to isolate and get to the basket. So that diminishes it. And then he's not really going to make up the difference on the defensive end of the floor. But one thing, if we're going to look slightly on the positive side, at the end of the third, beginning of the fourth, I felt like yesterday they were running a lineup with Brogdon out there with Justin and Aaron and McDermott all at the same time. And one little tweak they made is McDermott was up at the wing. And even though he wasn't making shots, you could tell that his defender was going to stick with him. And that made it easier and kind of got Brogdon on somewhat of the role he was on to be able to get into the paint, because they weren't stepping over at the nail to help on him. So I think that there's some stuff that can be gained just by his gravity being out there, even if he isn't not actively knocking down shots. But as you say, yeah, that bench unit has definitely struggled. I mean, some of the shots that McConnell makes when he, you know, comes down the lane and springs and doesn't really take a normal floater just haven't been falling for him. And I don't think it's great that, you know, we talked earlier about Edmund Sumner. If you are playing him out there and you have TJ McConnell and Jakar Sampson at the, all on the floor at the same time, that's basically three non-shooters that just make it easier to shrink the floor, unless they're constantly just pushing the pace at max levels, which is harder to do when you're taking the ball out of the net, which they were doing a lot of yesterday.
Yeah. So is there anything that Nate can do to kind of make any adjustments that might stem the tide a little bit? Because it seems like there aren't many options there, and I don't know if he's already made some in-game series adjustments, but maybe there's something else that you might see that might work in Indiana's favor.
Right. I think I'd have to look back at what the box score was, but it felt like Miles played a few more minutes with that group than he had in the prior two games, and at least in that instance, if he's out there and they're not scoring, at least you have the rim protection there, because defensively they just, you know, Jakar hustles and he tries to make catches tough, but it's going to be fairly easy to get to the basket against that group because there's just not going to be enough interior deterrent there. So maybe you try to, I mean, I've been kind of surprised that he's gone with the entire all bench lineup a couple times in these games. So maybe you shorten the rotation a little bit more and try to at least keep some defense on the floor so you're not bleeding points. But yeah, I mean, I don't think all the way around, it just doesn't feel like there's a lot of levers left for McMillan to pull to make a difference in the series.
So if you had to give a prediction, I know it's tough, but what do you see playing out in game four? I talked about it with Tony before. To me, again, like I said earlier, I think a sweep seems likely. Just the pressure, again, of wanting to go home and the insurmountable challenge of trying to even up the series. Is there anything else that you could see as far as an outcome on Monday?
I mean, the Heat's going to have to be really cold from the three-point line. They're going to have to get a night where Miami's not shooting it well, and that they come with the same amount of force that they did in the second half and really want to try to make this a series. I mean, that sounds even kind of patronizing, because I don't think it's because they don't want to. But, you know, having that sense of motivation that they want to extend it. It's kind of interesting that Sabonis is in the bubble now. I don't know if you saw that, but like all of that's very curious to me, because why now? Like,
doesn't
I don't
make
know.
Any sense.
The only thing that I can figure from this is, from an outside standpoint, I did see, which I didn't listen to this personally, but I know that, I guess, Ryan Russillo said on the Bill Simmons podcast that there might be some rumors that supposedly Sabonis wants out, and I don't know. I don't have any intel on that, but maybe that was a reaction by him and the Pacers of, you know, he's going to come to the bubble and look like, you know, we want him here as a show that he's supporting the team after those rumors were rumbling over the weekend. Because otherwise, like, even if they extended the series, he's going to have to be in his hotel room for 4 days. Like, even if he's there right now, if they do get swept, they won't even have been able to see him. Like, it's very strange to me that you wouldn't have just left him at his home in California where he was, rather than flying him down there. Because it's not like he's going to be at practice tomorrow providing, you know, moral support to his teammates or, you know, motivation in any sense.
He can't play against the Heat, even if the series gets 7 games. Like, I mean, for him to be able to get back into shape where he's comfortable out
there. No, it would be such a risk. He hasn't practiced in months. Like, that entire storyline, plus – let me take it even a step further. The fact that the Pacers and Nate McMillan told the media that before the game, why were you giving your opponent any extra urgency? Because if I'm the Heat, I'm thinking, oh, if there's a chance, you know, he might come back and play, let's put the nail in the coffin today. We want to go up 3-0 even more. Like, that all was very odd.
See, on the flip side, and this is the only thing I can come up with, is that it's Nate and the front office way of saying, no, we believe in you guys so much that we're willing to bring back Domas as a show of support, because he's going to be available, because you guys are that good and you're going to be able to advance into the next round where he'll be available and to join you on the floor. That's the only thing I can think of, is that it's like a show of support.
Let's hope that's what it was.
Because otherwise, and for him to be out there, it's not even a lame duck. It's just pointless. It's like, enjoy your hotel room. You're going to be there
a
lot.
And then fly back. Like, he's going to be in the Grand Floridian for like 48 hours. And then if they get swept, fly back home. I don't know. It seems like the Pacers are usually such like a low drama, odd occurrence team. And it feels like there has been a lot of that in the last month of just weirdness. Even yesterday, I didn't even see the moment when Victor left the floor until it had blown up on Twitter after the game, because I guess that was on the Heat broadcast. I didn't see it on the national broadcast that he got up and left, but then I guess after the game he said he went to the bathroom with 30 seconds left in the game. Like, I don't know. After he fouled out, that's what he said, because he left the court after he fouled out, and when somebody asked him about it, he said that he had gone to the bathroom like with 30 seconds left.
He couldn't have waited. Yeah, I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, maybe he was frustrated. Maybe he just couldn't think of anything else. I don't know. It's so ridiculous.
But there's just a lot of weird things. I don't know.
Much more drama than there should be. I kind of tweeted it out during the game because he was going to get roasted for it, because it just, the optics of it looked terrible.
It was definitely a bad look.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come out, Caitlin. That's Caitlin Cooper of Indie Cornrows. You can follow her on Twitter at C2_Cooper. She's one of the brightest minds in the business, breaking down X's and O's for you and so much more. Make sure you stay on top of the Pacers and the NBA. Are you going to be covering the league once the Pacers eventually are bumped out of the bubble?
Well, we'll see. I've had a couple of inquiries. We'll see what comes of some of it. I'm hopeful to get a little bit of my batteries recharged. I feel like the quarantine, I don't know how you've been, but I feel like the quarantine was almost more tiring than the regular season, because so much of the content, at least on my end, was coming up with, you know, sort of these cool, like, numbers based or some, you know, random topic from the past or whatever it was that was a little bit more mental focused than it would have been just to cover the live games. So I feel a little bit like I need just a little bit of time to regroup and recharge.
Yeah, it's definitely it's thrown the timing off completely, but it's been interesting at the same time. Have you been pleasantly surprised by the level of play in the Orlando bubble?
The offense has been insane. Like I haven't gotten to read it yet. I saw that Mike Prada, formerly of SB Nation, wrote a piece for 538 about what all led to that. And I'm going to have to dig into it because, you know, watching from the Pacers end, like the Pacers weren't even part of the whistle crisis. Like it largely didn't affect them. Their foul rate, the number of fouls they were committing didn't go up and the number of free throws they were taking didn't go up. And yet all these offenses were, you know, I've just exploded inside the bubble for all these various reasons. And at first I thought, well, it's because all these teams are taking more free throws, but that wasn't the case for all of them. So it's definitely been, I would have expected the defenses to be ahead of the offenses, and it was the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I mean, I think it's also the surroundings, the environment itself, the background. I know it certainly lends itself to some positive mm-hmm. shooting numbers, so that's probably been a factor as well. But again, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support. Yeah!
Wrap it up, D.